Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest today is Mike Eckel, senior correspondent here at RFERL in Prague. Mike, thanks for hosting the show last week and for being my guest this week.
You bet, Steve.
All right. Today we're going to talk about one thing that is happening this week, Russian President Vladimir Putin's trip to Israel for kind of an alternative commemoration of the liberation of Auschwitz. And we're going to talk about something that happened last week, but obviously has ramifications for years to come, and that's Putin's proposals for constitutional change in Russia. Let's go with the first one first. Next Monday is the marks the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz by the Soviet Army. Obviously, that death camp in Poland. And Moscow and Warsaw have been sniping at each other for months now, if not years. But they seem to step it up a notch in recent weeks. Putin is not going to the official Polish event, but instead he's going to an alternative event being held in Jerusalem this week on Wednesday. And the Polish president, who was also invited to Jerusalem, withdrew from that event after organizers there said he wouldn't be allowed to speak. Mike, you've been reporting on this for a story that's actually just gone up on our website today. So what's going on here? Is this just more of the same, or is it all something qualitatively different?
So my sense is that this is, like you said, this has been going on for some time now, months if not years, but it is qualitatively different what we've seen in the past, say, 4 to 6 weeks, the back and forth between the foreign ministries in Warsaw and in Moscow, the presidents speaking. Putin has had two or three events where he's had where his comments about the Red Army's liberation of Poland have been prominent, and he's dredged up wartime history about remarks that Poland's envoy to Nazi Germany pre-war allegedly said. But my sense is that this is qualitatively different because it is, in fact, the 75th anniversary of the end of the Great Patriotic War, as World War II is known in Russia. And for years, of course, Putin has and the Kremlin have made it a point to emphasize a sort of triumphant or triumphalist version of World War II history, a history that accentuates, if not glorifies, the role that the Soviet Union and the Red Army played in defeating Nazi Germany in 1945. Of course, the Soviet Union bore the heaviest price in terms of destruction and loss of life and property during the war. As listeners to this podcast well know, the defeat of Nazi Germany by the Soviet Union is considered one of the greatest moments in modern history, if not all of Russian history. So the sniping back and forth between Warsaw and Moscow about the liberation of Auschwitz, and even more recently about the liberation of Warsaw, ties in neatly to this narrative that the Kremlin is pushing, that the Soviet Army liberated Eastern Europe, and no one should tell us anything other than that. That's an established fact, and anyone else that tries to say something about, oh, well, it was occupied for 60 years afterwards, that's detracting from the most important aspect, that we, the Soviet Union, defeated Nazi Germany. Full stop, no other discussion.
Yes. I mean, I would note that the Soviet Army defeated Nazi Germany with the help of the other allies.
Of course.
But as you say, I think this has sort of become a hardening position. Actually kind of hard to imagine how it could get any harder, but I think it has been hardened, this position that that, as you mentioned, you know, there's to be no questioning about this. There was a striking comment, I think, by the foreign ministry, whether it was Zakharova or the ministry, in a statement, or maybe it was a tweet. But the idea that it was something about addressing the 60 years of occupation, or that, well, the Soviet Union liberated Poland, but it's up to Poland and those countries, you know, to provide freedom. I mean, this was sort of a response to the Polish. I think Poland has been saying, you know, liberation, but not freedom,
right,
was what was provided. So, like, in a way, you could, and as somebody argued on social media, so in a way, that wording from the Russian side means, well, you should have fought against us then, if you felt you were being, if you were, you know, your freedom was being repressed or denied. So, so, you know, I guess that just sort of speaks to the level of the spat that or the dispute and the bitterness that's going back and forth about this.
Let's not forget also, earlier on, going back into the summer, there was the discussion about the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, which was basically divided up Eastern Europe into spheres of influence between Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union. And as, again, listeners of this podcast know well, there were the secret protocols that allowed for the Soviet Union to occupy. It basically allowed for the dismantling of Poland in 1939. And the European Parliament in September, I believe it was, basically said, well, you know, World War II was to blame, Hitler was to blame, but also Stalin was to blame for starting World War II. And that infuriated the Kremlin and Moscow, which basically said, no, we weren't to blame. We, in fact, were the victims of the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, and that was a triumph of Soviet diplomacy that we were that Molotov signed the pact, and it allowed for the Soviet Union to prepare for war, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So, you know, again, to my underlying point, this all feeds into the narrative, this hardening, as you put it, of this narrative interpretation of historical interpretation of World War II. And, you know, this is how it's going to be, and no one should tell us otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell me a little bit more about this event that Putin is attending. I believe 5 years ago he also did not go to the event in Oswiecim in Poland. I believe it was held there. But I think he did go 10 years ago and made a speech. This year, again, he not going to Poland, is going to Israel for an event a little bit earlier. Tell us a little bit more about this this event.
So this event being held in Jerusalem is hosted by a gentleman by the name of Moshe Kantor, who heads an organization called, I believe, the World Holocaust Forum, and mm-hmm. Forgive me that I may not be getting that name correct. The event is being held at the Yad Vashem Memorial in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. It's attracting. It has invited Angela Merkel from Germany, President Macron from France. They will be in attendance. There will be other heads of states and dignitaries in attendance, and of course Putin will be there.
Right.
What's interesting is, of course, the high level of the delegations attending the event. It's also interesting that this is not, to the best of my knowledge, considered an official Israeli government commemoration. Prime Minister Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu, will be in attendance as well.
Mm-hmm.
What's also interesting is that the gentleman who is in charge of this forum and funding it, Moshe Kantor, or Vyacheslav Moshe Kantor, mm-hmm. is a Russian Jewish businessman who has been linked to the Kremlin by the U.S. Treasury Department in its listing, because it was in 2018, the so-called oligarchs list. So there are other things at play here, the fact that Kantor was able to net an agreement by Putin to attend this event instead of the official event in Poland. And let's also be, to be sure, Polish-Israeli relations haven't been so peachy in recent years, too. There's been sniping back and forth between Warsaw and Jerusalem. However, the former speaker of the Knesset and the former Israeli ambassador to Poland came out a couple weeks ago talking about what he saw as the inappropriateness of Kantor hosting this Auschwitz commemoration event. Mm. So, you know, clearly there are some other things at work in this this alternative commemoration.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, among other things, a way for Putin to, you know, to try to mark this and maybe get the most out of it without kind of becoming more embroiled or without involving Poland, so that kind of spat can be set aside at least by Russia and by Putin for the moment.
Right.
All right. Well, this deepened dispute with Poland about history, World War II history, and the aftermath comes months ahead of the Russian celebrations, as you mentioned, of the 75th anniversary of victory over Nazi Germany in World War II. That's always been a big celebration in Moscow, and promises to be even bigger this year. And regardless of, at least in Russia, regardless of what foreign leaders attend. Now, Putin's government shakeup and the proposed changes in the constitution come years ahead of the next presidential election in 2024, slated for 2024, in which Putin is barred from running by the existing constitution, barred from running for a third straight term. Now, one thing that seems almost certain at this point is that Putin is not planning to change the constitution in a way that would allow him to run for re-election in 2024. No, I think few people expected him to do that even before his most recent remarks, which came in the State of the Nation address last Wednesday. And then he made some more remarks that seemed to have a similar meaning later last week. But I think the proposals he did make for constitutional change, while they provide a fairly clear blueprint of a system in which parliament gets more formal power at the expense of the president and the now mainly symbolic state council receives a beefed up role, leave plenty of questions about how it will all play out. So, Mike, what's your main take from Putin's remarks, his proposals for constitutional change?
I mean, the main takeaway, I guess, is indeed we are now in a succession transition right now. We're trying to figure out, the Kremlin first and foremost, is trying to figure out who will be the lead dog after 2024. And there's no indication whatsoever that Putin is stepping off the stage completely. And as you mentioned, this proposal for the state council receiving a beefed up role, in fact, there seems to be a growing consensus that that will be the vehicle by which perhaps Putin manages to retain some sort of supra leadership position. Not unlike the thinking is that will be not unlike what happened in Kazakhstan with Nursultan Nazarbayev, and indeed some people have also drawn parallels to the Chinese political system as well. But there still leaves open the question, so who will step into this role after Putin moves to the side or moves up, I guess, depending on how you describe it? Who will be the next president?
Right.
And who will be, and will that president be subordinate in terms of authority to the prime minister? Like you say, the Duma, the parliament will have the proposal is for the Duma and the Federation Council to have increased legal authority in several different spheres. So the new president, whoever will be in place after 2024, will theoretically have fewer powers vis-a-vis the prime minister, but then Putin is then theoretically at the head of the state council, in a beefed up role. You know, there are lots of things to sort out, and not everyone is in Moscow or elsewhere is entirely clear how this is what the thinking is. And to be sure, Moscow's political elite, Russia's political elite, was stunned by the decision. There were very few people in Moscow who were aware that this was coming down the pike. The announcement that the government would be resigning, which occurred just, 3 hours after Putin concluded his State of the Nation address.
Right. Yeah, I think, I mean, one of the things that was notable about it, just the fact that it happened so early, relatively early in Putin's current term. I think most analysts certainly expected that he wouldn't sort of tip his hand about any real concrete plans until a bit closer, you know, maybe around the time of the Duma election slated for 2021 next year. So I think for pretty much everyone, this did come as a surprise so early, and clearly they're going to push ahead quickly with making the changes, even though they haven't actually, you know, detailed them yet. But now there's reports saying that the vote, like a plebiscite or vote by the people for the proposed changes, could be held on April 12th or April, I think, 26th. They would come into effect soon after that and would in fact be passed. The constitutional changes would be passed by the parliament before that. So, you know, that's not very much time. And of course, people are saying, well, the speed is a way to, you know, to keep the opposition, you know, make the opposition unable to really respond quickly. And there are other reasons why this is a tough thing for Putin's opponents to respond to. I think I agree with you, or you know, I agree that it seems like, I mean, one thing that Putin is doing is giving himself a lot of options in terms of what role to play, what role others should play. He's set up, if these things are pretty much enacted as he suggested, which they will be, he set up several positions he could presumably take that would enable him to maintain a leading role or the leading role in Russia. The State Duma Speaker, ruling party chief, prime minister, and head of a strengthened state council or possibly security council. Now, I think it'll depend somewhat on, you know, how confident he is in the people that he, you know, chooses and sets up to be in other key roles, mainly the presidency. But I think the best bet, at least now, is that, yes, he would take a role, or I guess he is the head of the state council now, but he would sort of use that role as the head of what would be a beefed up state council, you know, to maintain his hand, keep his hand on the reins in Russia.
I've read some, as many people have. There's been lots of people have been reading lots of different analysis over the past several days. Mm-hmm. And one of the more insightful ones that I picked up is from Tatiana Stanovaya, who made the observation that now we have a prime minister in place, a new prime minister. That's Mikhail Mishustin, the head of the Federal Tax Service. He's seen as a technocrat without much of a political base, but seen as a competent technocrat. And that could be an important position in terms of the economic problems that Russia is facing, namely the implementation of the national projects. But Stanovaya made an interesting observation. She said, look to the deputy prime minister's position. Look who becomes the deputy, the first deputy or just one of the deputies. And that will be a key to finding out who the thinking of the Kremlin and Putin as far as who could be the nominal successor as president. Mm-hmm. Because in 2007 and 2008, if I'm not mistaken, Dmitry Medvedev was a deputy prime minister, and I believe Sergei Ivanov was another deputy prime minister at the time there. And lo and behold, we had Medvedev in that 4-year interim period where he and Putin swapped roles. So I think once we get a full government put in place, voted in place by the Duma, then we'll get a better sense of who the successor could be. And then we'll get a sense of how potentially Putin will sort of seek to structure this new new authority with the State Council.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. I think that is a good good way to sort of read what may be happening next. As you mentioned, you know, there was I can't recall actually what Medvedev and Sergey Ivanov whether they were in equal positions, but clearly there was a very clear kind of they were set up as the two candidates as possible successor, and then I think they kind of battled it out for a couple months or more, and then Putin announced it would be Medvedev. So we may have a similar situation coming up soon or in the next few years, you know, or maybe Putin will make it harder to kind of read the future. But that is a good way of getting an idea of what's going to happen. All right, let's wind it down for this week. Mike Eckel, thanks again for joining me.
You bet, Steve. Anytime.
All right. Tune in next week for another edition of The Week Ahead in Russia. And please take a look at my weekly article on events in Russia, which runs on Fridays. Thanks for listening.